Feral Audio.
How are we doing? Good? Great? All right, let's rip into this. I don't even know. Oh, hello. It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. I put a little laugh in my voice to pretend that there was brightness in my heart. It's all a lie. I'm lying through my teeth. Hello, everybody. I hope you're having wonderful summers. Mine's been great. I've been busy, but I've also found some time to just sit by the pool and lounge and cackle. Sometimes to myself, sometimes others are involved. That's also really nice. I just have been noticing, it just seems like this summer more than ever, there's been an insane amount of rosé consumed. I mean, it feels like every minute we're getting more and more into this delicious pink, sometimes peach, sometimes onion skin, sometimes deep, deep fuchsia, burbling, is that a word? It is when you're drunk. Hello, good morning. This hybrid or this weird thing, is it white? Is it red? It's rosé. And everyone feels very classy when they drink it. It should be very, very dry, and I find it delicious. I love it. Here's the thing. We love to be snotty about things. We just say, remember that I'm going to say it, awful movie Sideways that's so overrated, that is just about horrible, entitled white male pigs and how awful they are to women and to their mothers and... I love lots of other things that all those people make, but I did not care for that movie. Remember what it did to Merlot? It was like we decided Merlot is trash. Well, Merlot is not trash. There's types of Merlot that are delicious, and Merlot like took a nosedive because we just as lemmings that we are, we decided that that's not the appropriate wine to drink. I don't enjoy wine snobbery. I think you should like what you like. But here's a spoiler for all you snobs. A lot of the time when it's labeled rosé, you're drinking white Zinfandel. They're kind of the same thing. I mean, they're made similarly. White Zinfandel is a lot sweeter, and rosé should be a lot drier. But a lot of things that are labeled rosé are just, they taste like Kool-Aid. And everyone's like, I'm having rosé. Well, if you like a shitty sweet wine, that's what you like, and go for it. I mean, hey, drink ranch if that's your thing. I love what you love. I love Heinz ketchup. I don't like any restaurant ketchup. I don't like any sort of artisan organic Annie's. No Hunt's. Eat a dick, Hunt's. No, I want Heinz ketchup. I know that I've tasted much more, you know, elegant ketchups. I don't want it. I want Heinz. So if you like white Zinfandel, I'll just enjoy it. I don't like white Zinfandel, just personally. I had a grandmother that on my dad's side, the drinking side, my mom's side, they don't drink, my dad's side. And she would always have white Zinfandel at like family gatherings, and it would always be in this little crystal goblet. And I would always get to a little taste because they were all drunks, and they're like, let's get them drunk fast, as young as they can. Give them a taste for it. They'll be as bitter as we are before they hit puberty. But it was just this sweet, sick, it would sting the back of my jaw, and it was just so sugary. And then I remember one really fateful night in college where I did polish off an entire magnum handle of Behringer white Zinfandel. And that is like, I mean, just, you're just like licking a sugar bowl that's been left out in the sun. And it's horrifying. So I like a drier. I like a drier wine. But that's just what I like. I don't think I'm better than you because you like a sweeter wine. But I just have to say, A lot of you are drinking White Zinfandel. All right. Just know that. That's what that is. And you're being sold a bag of goods. It's just like when potato chips have sea salt on them, like Himalayan sea salt or like Madagascar vanilla. Like, come on. It's marketing. Rosé is marketing. It all is. Our next door neighbors growing up were Shiite Muslims from Iran, but in Lincolnton, North Carolina, they couldn't tell everybody that they were Iranian. So they told all of us that they were from Persia. And we all believed them because it was the early 80s. And it's like Persia, ooh, you know, magic carpets. And that doesn't mean, you know, they were Iranian and they were lovely. They are lovely. But they, you know, sometimes you have to market how you, you know, who you are, what you drink, what you eat, all of that. I promise I'm sober right now. I promise I am. Sure. Believe me. But that's it. You know, just have a great summer. Sit by the pool. Enjoy your life. You're drinking White Zinfandel. Well, hello, you two.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What if that was the voice you used this whole for like an hour? I would be like, oh, my God, what is she doing? I'm sitting here with the wonderful, the effervescent Mary Grill and Lana McKissick.
Hello.
Hi.
I think you're effervescent.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, we were just talking about wine. I was just talking about wine in my intro, and we started talking about it a little bit. I'm like, let's save it for the podcast. So, Rosé, Mary, you enjoy it?
Oh, I really like it.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. Mm-hmm. And Lana, you were saying?
I guess I haven't really had it because I always thought it was White Zinfandel. So when you
know what, you're right. Maybe I haven't.
Yeah. No, you have had it. It's just that they're the same thing. I mean, I'm speaking totally out of my ass, and I really need a wine snob to really tell you. But if you Google them, it's like, oh, they kind of are. That they're made the same way. That's just that one is, you know, the sugar. It's ferments longer, I guess, and that's like white. Or less, I don't know. I don't know how it works. Maybe it's less, and they can. I mean, I don't know what I mean. What I don't know what I'm saying.
I like a cold pink drink.
I like a cold pink drink too. Mm-hmm.
I used to. There came a day when I stopped liking sweet things. I don't know what happened. It happened with coffee, and it happened with alcohol. Like I don't. It was overnight. It wasn't over time.
But that's the thing. A rosé is not sweet.
Right. So now I'm like, I'll try. I've avoided it because I thought, well, I don't like White Zin anymore.
Yeah. If you try a rosé that's really sweet, it's really rosé. It's really White Zin. Which, how many times have I said that today? Oh, my God. I sound crazy. I am the same way, though, that I got into scotch and olives and blue cheese and things that I never liked. Black licorice. Like, I turned into an old man overnight.
Black licorice.
I'm going to start, I don't know, like, am I going to just start eating belts and, you know, and just licking the street? Because it's not like pungent and dirty enough for me. Like, I don't know. What am I?
There was a study done that if you have, if you like bitter things like gin or olives or coffee, that you have a higher chance of being a psychopath.
True. I'll own it.
I like all those things.
What do those things mean? It's just like so crazy.
I take the compliment.
Ignore all of it.
Sounds pretty accurate.
I'll own it. It's fine. But I'm like, I want Campari. I want black coffee.
Me too.
I mean, I love all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I used to be a way into like margaritas and like Midori sours and like really shitty sugary things, and I don't enjoy that anymore. Mm-mm. I don't like sweet that much at all.
I don't like margaritas at all.
I mean a really good true freshly squeezed margarita like with lime juice and tequila I love, but once you put that triple sec margarita mix in it, no. it's just too much.
Gross.
Syrup. It's vile.
It is.
I know, but we like.
I'll still drink it though.
I know. I mean, you know. Hey, in a pinch, it's always right when you go to like an event or something that's like sponsored by, and you have like the limited choices. Yeah. And like, what am I gonna drink here? Because I'm also turning into a snob. Like, what I liked it. I just I like. I also know, like, if I have a, I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow if I have one bullshit drink. Like, I do have to think ahead about that. And, and I should just learn the lesson of, like, how about have a water, Drew? Like, do you have to have booze because it's there?
Yeah. We have to have both.
I mean, yes. Yeah. Yes. There's also that.
Or not.
Mary, you're having a child. You're with child right
I'm
now.
I'm having a baby. I haven't had a margarita or a rosé in a while.
Oh, my gosh. Are you, because I know some pregnant ladies can say, like, they can have a glass of wine. Are you doing any of that at all? Or are you just...
You know what? I've had some sips more than, like, a glass. I'm sure it's fine. I thought I would be somebody who was like, I'm going to have a beer here and there. I'm going to have a wine here and there. But... honestly, I haven't because it's like, I want five wines.
Yes.
I don't want one.
I get that. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. And
it's like,
easier to say
and it
no.
does ruin sort of the fun of like having a glass of wine when you know with every sip, like, I'm not supposed to do this.
Right, yeah. right.
It kind of ruins it. So I was surprised to find like, I don't feel like it.
I have a friend who loves drinking and she's also having a baby or just had a baby. And she's like, she talked about it. She goes, I really didn't have a desire to drink that much because I think it's all that. It's a psychological thing where you're like, I shouldn't be doing this. And she's like, and I just didn't have a taste for it. Like once
oh,
I started eating.
Taste.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I mean, you know, some people are like, it's horrible. I don't think it's horrible. It's just like, it is what it is. And you just like put it over there.
Uh-huh.
But now that, I mean, I'm doing like a month and now I'm like, I cannot wait to have... a dirty martini.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm looking at the wine in our house, like, on the wall, just going like, what are we going to do first?
Yeah. That's so, that's wonderful. Well, congrats.
Thanks.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
And again, just congrats on making it 8 and going on 9 months without alcohol, because I just don't know that I could do that. I mean, I just I enjoy
you
it
could.
Way too much.
8 or 9 days. Sometimes
I know I haven't gone 8 or 9 days in that I know of without
years. Years.
Years. It's been years since birth. Well, Lana, you and I have done a lot of shows at the Rockwell, which is a basically like a glorified, really nice dinner theater cabaret space. And part of our payment is alcohol. Like part of our deal is you get drinks afterwards.
And, yeah.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's a huge part of the culture because you have friends come to see the show, or even if friends don't come, then you hang out with the cast and everyone drinks. And you sort of go from like, oh, I have a glass of wine each night to being like, I'm binge drinking 3 nights a week.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to hang out and party with you, you know, and it's just, it is part of the culture. And
it
is sort of thing that I do, like, I really do truly admire my sober friends who are also part of the culture and have to just not drink and when they're out. Because, you know, I did a show last night, you know, we did an improv show and then we go across the bar from the Groundlings and we all have booze and that's just part of the whole thing.
Right.
And, you know, to be able to walk into the bar and be like, I have a lot of demons here, but I don't want to just go home and not be included.
Yeah.
You know, because and we don't want you to go home just because you're sober and, you know, but it is a lot to have to go in there and be like, I'm going to get, you know, a soda water. Please.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, because it's definitely part of for the culture. And you know, and also for me, like after a show, I'm always really tired and I kind of exhausted. And so I have to be careful with drinking because I'm not really in touch with my sobriety level. Like, I'm just like, I sort of drink as if I'm thirsty and it's good and there are people and I'm excited and I'm
this
like,
is empty and I'm going to fill it.
And I haven't eaten for the last 3 hours at least. And so I'm just like, oh, I don't realize until like a couple in that I'm like, whoa.
And you've also been sweating for a couple hours. So you're dehydrated.
Especially at Rockwell, we sweat so much there.
Yeah. Is it hot in there?
Oh, it is. Well, you're running around a restaurant and you're mic'd. You have a hot mic pack on your back and you're in a wig and in costumes and you have to do costume changes. And yeah, you're running around and people are and like doors are opening with like steam coming out of it with like pizzas and like rigatoni and whatever's happening coming out at you. I don't think they have rigatoni there, but I don't know.
But they should.
They should.
So.
Chris and Wayne, if you're listening, have rigatoni. but it's a blast. I mean, it's a whole experience. But you're you're in the, there's sort of like you're just in the middle of everything and you're running around in adrenaline and you do sweat a lot. And there's a huge, there's a band. And so you scream over a band.
Right.
And, you know, so it's a lot. It's, yeah. It's a workout.
That'll make your heat go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it's packed, there are so many people in there.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Just that, even if 200
people can get in there.
And oh, so, my God.
Yeah, it's really great. Have you ever seen a show there, Mary?
No, I got to go. And I live walking distance.
Oh, you should go.
I totally want to. And we, my husband and I, we always go like, we got to go.
Yeah.
And then that's where that ends. Yeah, but now I'm really going to go.
Yeah. Bring the baby. It'll be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
No. It's mommy's night.
Okay, you're right.
Mommy's having lots to drink. Very dirty martinis.
Go Nine-Nine.
And then you and your husband and lovely Cass Bouguet,
mm-hmm,
have a wonderful show called American Town Hall.
Thanks, Drew.
Which is, I've only done it, I think, twice, and it's the most fun show to do in LA, and I've watched it a couple times too. It's so much fun to watch. You tell us what it is.
I want to just say thanks. You are such a pleasure to have on the show. We
it's
love
so
having
much
you
fun
on the
to
show.
Do.
It is so fun. So we've been doing it for 4 years, a little over. And I think it's a testament to how much fun we have to have been doing it, you know, that many years and be like, I have a great time every time.
Yeah.
It is a fake city council meeting for a real American city, mm-hmm, but it's always in LA. So we pretend we're in Rockford, we pretend we're in Sedona, we pretend we're in Long Beach, wherever. And it's,
right.
Yeah. And then we have guest comedians. There's the citizens, and Matt and Cass and I are always the local government.
Well, the three of you run, mm-hmm, the meetings every time.
Right.
And it's if you're just at that meeting.
Right.
And your character work is so good.
Oh, you're nice.
Oh, no. It's scary that you feel like you're actually there.
Yeah.
And you all, like, you switch out genders and you all play, like, these people that are just so damaged, but it's just about getting this meeting across.
Yeah.
And so you're just like stuck in this meeting, and it's such a fun idea for a show. And the space, are you still doing it at Copper still?
We moved it to the Virgil.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Ago.
Okay, so the Virgil is really fun. Is a really
the
great
Virgil
space.
The Virgil has been great. It's been a great move.
But with the Copper still, you were in the side room, and it was like the look of it was like you were in a real meeting hall.
It was like a dumpy banquet hall.
Yes.
Is it filmed or it's a live show?
It's a live show.
Okay. And it's written. Everybody writes a character bit.
And so when the guests, they always have like about four guests.
Yeah.
Who come to the meeting with some sort of agenda. Like they have something that they've been scheduled. And so, you know, that you come and just, you know, somebody wants to protest the pumpkin sale down the street or whatever it is. It could be
but they
anything.
Really want to talk about the fair their neighbor's having.
Yes.
I mean,
it's a lot of
it's really
stuff
fun
out.
Because like it's just the meeting is an entryway
right.
to get people here. And what it is a platform to see all sorts of people's eccentricities,
yes.
you know, because if you've ever been to like a town hall meeting or heard one on the radio.
Oh, it's my favorite thing to watch. Like when people post like public access videos of people on town halls, I love it. It's fascinating.
Amazing. And they rarely get to the point.
It's like, well, they've never been. It's like just it's just like unhinged. It's people just show up and they'll pull things out of their bags. Mm-hmm. They'll just you know, they don't know how to get to a point. They don't mm-hmm. know how to they don't know storytelling. It's not like they know to, you know, and it's their time. It's
and
they
usually they're furious.
Oh, yes.
You know, they are so mad. That they've come to a meeting.
Yes. Well, like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, you know, you want to see characters at that point. You don't want to see them, like, on a happy, like, easy day. They want to be like, I feel so enraged and emboldened to come here and just really let this out. But, I mean, mm-hmm. one of my favorites that you've done, and I've told you a long time, but I love it, is that you played this man who was this lady's shoe salesman.
Oh, Barry. Barry Mayadays.
Barry Mayadays. And he was
Cleveland.
And he was in okay, so we were in Cleveland and he was having all these affairs with all these women.
Right.
And he was kind of casually dropping different women that he had been with and it was just this and he was super perky and really kind of friendly guy. He
was a rascal. It was like a sexy rascal.
And he was
well intended,
but would always mention these women and then immediately follow it with their shoe size. And so
I knew everything about like what they wanted. in a shoe and in the sack. And I could deliver. And it wasn't good looking or sexy as a guy, but I just was like a monster lover.
Oh, it was so great. It was so fun and just
fun.
Disgusting. I loved him.
Disgusting.
And yeah. And there was another one like in Iowa, I believe, that I did, and you guys were all drinking milk.
Oh, that's right.
And it was just like during the meeting, everyone was just full 2% milk, and you guys were just drinking giant like glasses of milk during the meeting.
That's
it was
right.
Just like
and Drew was just trying to find his friend Rachel. He gets up. I mean.
Yeah, that
my
whole
cried.
Thing was I was looking for my friend Rachel. That was my whole storyline.
It was
and
so
And I really
funny
just got
though.
There to talk shit about Rachel. Like, it was really like I wanted the town against Rachel because I was mad at her.
Right.
And I was like, this was my forum to be like, you guys, there's something wrong with her. Just so
Has
you all
anyone
know.
Seen Rachel?
Wait, so do these characters come back ever? Or is it
no.
like every town
no,
is
No, every town
oh,
is
okay.
different. They play different characters every
That's
time. That's
so
the magic
cool.
of it. You have no idea who they're going to be playing and what the status is going to be or what they, you know, and it's really fun.
Mm-hmm,
it's a good
I'm
time.
I'm glad you think it's fun. We have
it's so,
so
much, fun.
Much fun. And it's fun to have something, be part of something that you can invite people to and feel like you're going to have a good
yes,
time. Please
yes,
come.
Right.
Please come. And
well,
yeah.
and it's everyone doing characters. And so it just feels like, it doesn't feel like, oh, we're all trying out comedy. It's hilarious, but it's not like come and sit through this a stand-up show or something where you're like everyone's right. trying out jokes and stuff. It's like it's just you guys are such good improvisers. You take care of everybody that's in it, and everyone
oh,
sings a song
you.
At the end, like the town song,
yeah.
and then they just change the words to a popular song, and
yeah.
it's all about the town. It's
oh
it's
my
super
God.
Fun. And Lana,
so
you
fun.
Just finished the Breakfast Club. It was called
The Last Breakfast
the
Club.
The Last Breakfast Club at the Rockwell.
The Rockwell, yeah. It was
the
a sequel, like homage parody, I guess you could call it, to mm-hmm. The Breakfast Club. But it was a musical, and it was all 80s rock, like the best music to sing in the world. So much
oh,
fun.
So great.
So they do yeah. the actual songs, or do they like change the lyrics for the show or anything?
No. So the song, we do the actual songs, and okay. then they're just sort of placed in context. So at one point, for example, you had Bender singing Shout, like Shout, Shout, Let It All mm-hmm. with uh-huh. The Brain. And it was like, you know, tell us what you really think, like get out of your shell. And it was like this crazy duet and a really pivotal moment in our show.
Well, that's the thing. The voices are incredible.
Right.
At Rockwell. I mean, they shake your skin off your body. They're so good. And you're just like, you're watching. Because it's a lot of Broadway talent that, you know, and Broadway caliber talent. It's the voices and music guests and, you know, it's that's where they go to do, you know, shows in LA. I mean, that's really
yeah.
like the, and it's wow. really incredible to sort of, you know, they're really usually, for the most part, funny shows. Sometimes they're not funny. They're not intended. They're not meant to be funny. And we
yep.
found some, you know, you were saying that in that show there was like some dramatic moments. And then when we did Devil yeah. Wears Prada,
yeah, there were a couple of...
We had some dramatic moments, and mm-hmm. You cried a bunch. Lana played Andy, the Anne Hathaway part,
mm-hmm.
against me as Miranda Priestley.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Oh my gosh.
We both alternated, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen pictures of Drew as Miranda?
I must have, right?
It's terrifying.
Yes.
He looked amazing.
I look more like
yes.
Cinderella's mother from the cartoon.
Yes,
that
awesome.
Wig was, you know, crazy. Yeah.
There was something about it, though, that... Just from the second you put it on and put your makeup on, you would raise one eyebrow, and I was so scared of you.
I was like, I'm thinking of the eyebrow.
Yeah, which, like,
I
you know.
Have, I believe, it's like the weirdest thing, and it sounds so gross and hippy-dippy and whatever, but it's just that thing, as an actor, you know, when you put the shoes on, when you get your character's shoes and you can walk around in your character's shoes, you really do feel more like that person.
Oh, yeah.
And wigs are the same way. There's something about it you put, and it's just hair. It makes no sense. Shoes make sense because it really dictates how you walk and how you feel. And if they're really constricting, it might, you know. But hair, but there's something about your hair that really does define
you. I totally
you.
Agree. I always say we're all just one hairstyle and outfit away from being a totally different person.
Yes.
Because we
even
are.
Hair color like makes yeah. people feel
yes,
differently
yes,
for
yes,
sure.
Yeah. Yes. And it's really crazy. And you put the wig on, you're like, I know who this is now. I get it.
Right.
And have you guys, I'm sure both of you have done like mask work, like in like acting classes
totally,
and stuff?
I mean, no, but everyone's been talking about this lately. I'd never heard of it. And then I feel like 2 weeks ago, people were talking about mask work. I was like, what?
What?
So this is now the third time.
I did it like years ago, but it's the craziest thing because when I've done it before, what I have done, and I haven't done it extensively, but the class that I did, it was like a day within a class. It wasn't even a full class. Mm-hmm. But you close your eyes and then people in the class or the teacher would put a mask on your face.
An actual mask. Okay.
And you would open your eyes and without touching the mask, it was on your own face, you would just start behaving. Mm. And it's fascinating how the mask takes over how you behave.
Totally.
And when you would watch other people do it, you're like, they have no idea what they look like, yet it's all making sense.
Right. Huh.
And it's weird how like you put something on and there's a shape that takes over your head and you can feel really aggressive or really
you become imbued
flirty
with
or whatever. It's really weird how it has something like takes over. There's some witchy power in that, that whole thing. And I don't know how it works, but
we believe in that. I went to like an acting conservatory at DePaul, and we did mask work with neutral masks. Uh-huh. Have you heard of this? Mm-hmm. They're clear. They're clear plastic masks.
So like convenience store robber masks.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you don't look like yourself, but it isn't like a devil or a grandma.
Right.
We all had the same thing, and it had drawn eyebrows and I think like lips and, you know, simple features.
Uh-huh.
But you kind of go away.
Right.
And it was really fascinating because I think what ends up coming out in your physicality or however you're performing are just your natural innate ideas.
Uh-huh.
It's cool.
Wow, that is really fascinating. And this is another leap. What made me think of was that I've always been fascinated by the like furry and plushy culture. Like, do you know what that is?
No, what is that?
Well, one of them, I'm not sure which is which, but one of them is you like to dress up like a stuffed animal and do sexual things.
Oh,
and the other
okay.
one is having sex with those things involved, I believe.
What?
But and it's one of those things that I don't really know that much about. I saw a documentary in Seattle.
Okay.
When you're in Seattle, you know, I saw a documentary called Fursonas, and it was really fascinating. It was actually more about this one crazy guy that was running this whole this operation, and it's a great documentary. But I was sort of like, what's that about? Because it's so not what I'm interested in, and also I feel like I'm so sexually boring because I feel like a lot of it is because I get to act out a lot of my fantasies on stage. Like
that's so funny.
I mean, on top of other things, I'm sure, but I'm just, and I'm like, there's part of me that I'm like, I'm dying to have a partner that like introduced me to some really weird kinky sex thing because I'm just not into anything that kinky. And I love people who are, and I am fascinated by it. I'm more like,
you've got your outlet.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like I could never do role playing. Like I could never walk into a bedroom dressed like a cowboy because that's what I do for a living.
Yeah. That's why I never want to dress up on Halloween.
I never want to dress up on Halloween either. And it's like, it kills all that instinct for you. As you're just like, that's what I'm like, unless there's an audience or a paycheck, I don't want to do that. And also like, I'm not interested in that because then it's like, we're just going to end up laughing. It doesn't turn me on.
Yeah.
I'm all about like, show me who you are. Show me the truth. And that's neither here nor there. But the furry thing, I'm just like, what is that that makes you want to be into that? And so I saw this documentary and I have a friend that lives up there, actually Matt Baum, who's done this show before, who's wonderful. And he invited me to a furry party because he knew of one while that was happening. And I was like, oh my God, yes.
Is that part of it? Like they all go to parties?
Yeah, they have like these sort of parties. And so I was like, I'm very interested in this. I don't want to go in this to make fun of them or to gloat. And I also, if this is not cool for me to go to, let me know about that too. Because I have kind of a problem with like, hey, let's go to black church this week. You know, it kind of feels a little bit like, it's just, I have the problem with that thing. So I'm like, I want to be very respectful, but I'm fascinated. I would love to go.
Right, right.
And he's like, no, there are people at all different stages of it and a lot of people that are curious. And I was like, as long as, you know. But I immediately got it when I walked in because it is people who – for the most part, that are in these head-to-toe fursuits, and they were playing around. There was nothing sexual happening in front of it. It was just a dance party kind of a thing.
Did you have to wear anything? Or
no. No, that was the thing. They welcomed every, you know. I think it was a big thing about, like, no videos and no, I mean, obviously, it was, like, a safe space. So there was no, like, if you're acting weird or, like, inappropriate. And I don't know that, like, I mean, maybe later in the night it got a little bit, you know, dirtier. But when I was there, what I saw was, like, everybody was putting on these head-to-toe costumes, and they could be whoever they wanted to be. And they were interacting with each other, and they were rolling around on the floor, and they were playing. And I was like, how free must it feel? Like, if you don't, there's no, like, sense of rejection. All your hangups about what you look like or what you might say or all that goes away. And you're just this animal with this other animal, and you're playing. And it's so primal. And I was like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I still wasn't like I wanted to do it as much as I was like, I totally understood in that sense. And I was like, this, I don't know how I didn't see this before. Like, I was like, I totally get it how for a lot of people. And it's the same as, like, people who go to Comic-Con and, like, they feel so empowered. Yeah. Drag queens, like, I'm this shy guy, and then I put a wig on and I have all this power. It's like, there is a power to this thing that sort of removes you from you.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is from your bullshit ideas about yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's all you the whole time.
Yeah.
You're the same person that you were, you know, without all that on. But it gives you a freedom to let things come out that you might be scared to, you know, and it takes you back to being a kid again. It's like when kids meet other kids at restaurant, you know, adults are at a restaurant and the kids run away and they meet other kids in the restaurant and they're playing and they're best friends all of a sudden. Like, that thing that we don't do as adults, because we're like, we have walls up and we can't possibly just make a friend all of a sudden. And, you know, we might have a little polite banter, but kids are just like, hey, you're cool. You're kind of my age. Let's go to run and eat leaves or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know. So anyway, I do love that. And I know it is fascinating.
It kind of makes me wonder what we would all be into if we didn't have the outlet that we have.
Like, I know.
I'm like, what?
I know.
I know. That's so funny. That, like, is like, whoa, I don't know what I would
That's the thing. Like, what we do is weird to a lot of people. The idea that we all put on wigs and we tell stories. Like, I'll be backstage in a crazy costume and I'll look at all the people and we're all, like, so serious about what we're doing. We're like, all right, so in this scene, I've got to go out and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we're going in front of people to just, like, entertain them.
Yeah.
And then be like, thank you. And it's been going on from the beginning of time. I mean, it is, you know, it's one of the oldest things that, you know, from the beginning of caveman times, there were people that would get up and tell stories and perform and make other people happy. And it's like, if we didn't have that outlet, what would we be doing?
Right.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to know either. I do feel very lucky that I do love this and that I get to do this.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of people don't know they don't know that they can do that. They're like, I would love to do that, but there's no way I could do that. I'm like, well, we're the idiots who are like, I don't know if I can do it, or I'm not going to ask for permission. I'm just going to start doing it. And, you know, it's pretty wonderful.
It is wonderful.
Yeah. Right.
You just play your whole life.
Oh, play. I know. That's all we do. I want to hear from y'all. I want to hear some personal revelations or some stories or something.
I like it.
Yeah. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
All right. All right, Miss Lana.
All right. Well, I was thinking about, I was like, what have I not really told people? Because, I don't know, I feel pretty open about the weird and stupid things that I've done in my life. But I remembered, when I was a child, I grew up in L.A., so, you know, of course, I was like, well, I'm going to be an actor and singer and whatever, as everyone does who's from here.
Sure.
Is that right?
Like, yeah.
There's, like, a real feeling of, like,
I think
vocation,
so.
Hollywood vocation here.
It just seems, because I know people who come from other places often say, I didn't even know that was a possibility
for
me.
That was my story. I had no idea that anybody could do that. I'm like, you're either Brad Pitt or you're in the gutter. Like, there was no in between, and I'll never be Brad Pitt. You know, I mean, I never thought it was it just sounded like, I'm gonna live in a coloring book for my life. It just sounds like a crazy thing.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
But when you're here, it is so accessible. It's like
yes,
I totally can easily find my way into an acting school or whatever it is. So my parents wanted to make sure that I knew what I was getting into before I really made a decision. And that sounds ridiculous because I was a child. But they were like, let's expose you to all, you know, kinds of different activities and things. So at any given moment, I was a very busy kid. I was on swim team. I took figure skating lessons. I was in like taekwondo and jujitsu and gymnastics. And
oh my gosh.
But I was also doing like painting and acting school and singing lessons and dance classes. And I was also doing kumon. And I took abacus lessons, you guys. That was a real
kumon,
thing.
Kumon? Is that the what
like,
is that?
It's like math. For when you're a kid, it's basically like math tutoring, but they're teaching you levels ahead of what you should be doing at your age. So I was doing
that. Oh, that's
like,
what that is. Because I know what it, I mean, I've gone by they're in New York. I friends of mine where I stay, they live right around the corner from one of those places, and mm-hmm. I'm always like, "What is that?"
Yeah, because it's also like the face.
The logo is a weird.
it's a weird frowny.
Like it looks. Yeah. I mean, this is so inappropriate, but it looks like Asperger's. It looks like some sort of like flat affect. Like I have nothing going on.
Yeah, I've always been like that's where kids who need a lot of help go.
Yes, I thought it was that. But you're saying it's advanced.
I think it can also, well, it also is different. So when I was a kid, there was no weird face. It was like a very, like you walked in, it was very serious. I think it can also be like tutoring for school. But when I was there, it was like I was doing like pre-calculus and I was in like elementary school. And I don't really necessarily understand, but I know how to do it. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, sure, sure.
Like I couldn't grasp like higher level concepts, but I was like, I'm very smart. I know how to, you know, answer the question. But in any case, one by one, I realized I'm terrible at most of those things. Like I'm very unathletic and like really bad at art. So I was like, I don't like these things. I'm not good at these things. And I was like, I really want to act and sing. And so my parents said, okay, well, the only thing is you have to keep up your grades. That's like the one, you know, prerequisite we have for you following this career path. And I was like, great, of course. I was always good at school. I was a pretty good kid.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Were your parents in the business at all?
No. So my dad was a criminal defense attorney.
That's right. I knew that.
Yeah, and my mom, it was a stay-at-home mom, but she's very strict Japanese, just whatever you conjure up when you hear that, that's what she was.
Sure, sure,
got
sure.
It.
Is. Got it. Say no more about her.
Oh, I know the one.
You've met my mother. But my dad was like sort of the opposite. You know, he was all American. Like he was the smartest person I had ever met. He passed away, but he was the smartest person I'd ever met in my life. Photographic memory, like super.
Oh wow.
But he was a lot more relaxed, and he was just sort of like, I want you to experience life too and have a good time, but you have to keep your grades up. So anyway, it's middle school, and I remember I knew report cards were coming out and that I wasn't going to do well in science. And the only thing I had ever really not done well was in penmanship. Terrible handwriting.
Oh, me too.
There's nothing that could be done about it, I guess.
I have really good handwriting, and it's
really?
The most useless thing ever. No, it's just like I don't know why I even keep it up.
But that's something that even someone who doesn't know anything about you, they can look at your penmanship and go, oh, that's nice. Like people look at me and they're like, you're a serial killer.
What's wrong?
Or you're a doctor.
That's like me too.
You must like really like bitter foods. And, you know,
yeah.
Black coffee.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know, when I knew I was like science, I don't know what it's going to be, but I know it's not going to be good. So I all of a sudden was very helpful around the house because I was like, I have to be near the mailbox when the mail comes so that I can make sure that I get to it first so that I can like prepare or whatever.
Yep.
So I was like, oh, let me help with bring the groceries inside. Or like, oh, let me go bring the trash out. Like I was always checking the mail. I'm like, oh, when is it going to come? So finally, one day when I checked the mail, I see, oh, this is my report card. So I stick it in my backpack. I run upstairs and I open it, and I had gotten a C in science, which was unacceptable in my house. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And I started crying because I remember like they're going to make me quit acting, and they're also going to like kill me, talk to me again.
My God.
I'm going to be buried in the backyard. Aww. These are all like legitimate thoughts that I had, which of course were ludicrous, but they were
sure.
real fears that I had.
Oh, it's all so real.
So real. It was so dramatic. And I said, okay, the only way to deal with this is I have to. My dad was away on a business trip, and I was like, if they'd never know this report card came, then maybe I can somehow just like skate over this and no one will be the wiser. My mom's like, you know, distracted with my two sisters as well. I was like, maybe they just won't know. So I'm just going to throw it away and not say anything. But I was like, if I throw it away at home and my mom happens to go through the trash, she'll find it. She'll be really mad. I'm so paranoid, right? Still. But so I said, okay, I'll throw it away at school. And then I went, no, that's a terrible idea. If they find it, the janitor is going through it for some reason, because apparently that's what people do. Go through the trash, find a report card. And then I was like, well, I'll be in trouble with my parents and the school, and I'll, you know, be expelled, and then I'll never go to college. Anyway, it's
real bad.
No, we are trained to have all that, with all of that fear. We are trained to our permanent record, you know, our resume, everything's about building up to college, and any false move, you're fucked.
You're fucked. And this is middle school too. It's not even high school. It's really not that big a deal. But I thought, all right, I know there's this contest going on right now at school. It's like an art thing. You can take some pictures, and there's like a photography segment, or you can like draw things or whatever. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell my mom that I'm entering this contest and that I need some materials. So I said, we have to go to, I think it was Thrifty at the time. It's now Rite Aid. I said, we have to go to Thrifty, Mom. I have this project and it's really important to me and I need to get it done. And she's like, right now? I said, yeah, we have to go right now. Said, okay. So she took me and we came back. So at the store, I bought like poster board.
Oh,
I bought construction paper of all different, and I was serious. I was, I couldn't get caught. Like, it was, that's how scared I was.
Oh my God.
I bought Elmer's glue. I bought all kinds of stuff. And initially I was just going to get the poster board and the glue, but I thought she's going to be like, what are you making? So I bought things. I had like feathers and glitter. I remember being like, she has to think this is real. So I just wasted so much money. Bought all this stuff, brought it home. My mom's like, good luck. I was like, thank you so much. Bye. And I ran upstairs and I ripped up my, oh no, I didn't rip it. I cut with scissors my report card into tiny, I essentially shredded it, but into tiny little pieces, and then glued those to construction paper that I also cut up. And then I glued those to the poster board, like, you know, so that the report card was hidden with the construction paper.
This is my favorite thing ever. I love this so much. I love you.
Glitter all over it. Feathers. It was a disaster. But I was like, she's never, ever going to know what's on the bottom of this. And so I brought it downstairs. And then I thought, well, you know, I don't want to bring it to school in case, again, the janitor's going through the art project and, you know, taking it apart as you do.
As janitors do. Their favorite thing to do is to really deconstruct art.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I went downstairs and my mom was like, what is this? And I was like, you hate it. And I made this big scene. And I was like, it's terrible. I'm throwing it away. I'm not doing this competition. I know she felt so bad, but I was like,
God.
So I threw it away. And
that part of the plan the whole time? Like, then end up in the garbage?
No, I hadn't thought that far ahead. But once she was like, what is this? I was like, oh, this is great. I'll make her feel like, you know, badly mad. Anyway, I was
improviser
so twisted.
In training. Yep.
Horrible. Yep. Oh, I threw it in the trash. Thankfully, my plan worked. My parents never knew. I think I told them later. They never knew this happened. They forgot that my report card was coming. Everything was fine. A few years later, I got a C in a science on a science test. One test. It wasn't a report card. So everything was okay. But I was like, oh, I got to tell my dad about this. And I said, Daddy, I'm so sorry. I got this C on this test. And he started crying. And I was like, what? And he goes, this is my fault. Like, I passed. I've never been good at science. And this man is a genius, like a legitimate genius. And he was crying. And I felt so bad. And then I was just like, thank God I never showed him that report card. That was a report card. He would have been devastated.
He saw that as a reflection on himself.
Yes. So I realized that lying and cheating is always the answer when you need to get out of a situation. That was my revelation.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, I was so hard on myself about grades that I never made a B through high school. I was straight A's. I was valedictorian in my high school.
You were?
Yeah, I was.
Good job.
I was Mr.
It
was stressful, yeah. And it was one of those things. And I mean, I went to a small high school, and it wasn't like I put so much pressure on myself because it was one of those things that I saw that it was attainable, and I was like, oh, I can do it. I've got this. This is mine. Mm-hmm. And I remember when, you know, there was somebody that moved in 11th grade who became the salutatorian, but he just, and I thought it was clearly mine. And then I saw that this guy moved in, and I was like, we were neck and neck. I mean, I got down to the end, and I was like, I'm going to, you know. And, you know, I was so hard on myself about grades and about making the good grade, and I thought that was what was important. And then, and I've told this story before on here, but I was busted for smoking pot and I got kicked out of every club my senior year. And I just, all the scandal. The only thing they couldn't take away from me was valedictorian. So I was president of all these clubs and all these things. But the one thing I had, but it was this bitter victory. I mean, I got to give the graduation speech. But I realized how unimportant all that was. And then I went to college and I was praying for C's when I went to college and was really taking tough classes. And then I remember getting my first C, my, you know, first semester of freshman year, and how relieved my parents were. They're like, oh, thank God. Like, you seem so much more human being. You're so much more like a human being now, you know, because there's also a thing I think about, like, I'm like, I'm not dealing with who I am. I'm going to just be constantly like, I'm going to be the overachiever and I'm going to make straight A's. And I thought the world worked that way. I thought the world was just going to open up and give me everything because I made good grades in high school. Mm. And nobody cares. No one asks you what you made on your SAT. Nobody cares about that stuff. But you, it's so important to you. And your world is that. Like, it's everything. And, you know, and I remember thinking, I was horrible in my head about a lot of people, like, what's it like for them? They make a lot of B's and C's, and they probably made a D. God, they must just really struggle. I'm like, no, they're happier with who they are, that they are, you know, easily smarter than you are. They are not. My brother, you know, is a genius. But my brother knew from an early age that grades didn't matter, and he made okay grades. He went through a period where he was making terrible grades. It doesn't make him less smart or like, and he's, now he has this amazing job and, you know, owns a house and has, you know, it's like he's done insanely well for himself and supports a family, you know, and I'm still putting on wigs and going to furry parties and in my 40 years on earth.
But I got those A's.
But I got A's, everybody. But it's so weird but I remember the pressure and grades, and it was, you know, it sucks that that's what it's about, you know, and I'm so glad. I mean, I had to learn the lesson really hard and fast and publicly because it was a public humiliation for me that it was like, you are, you know, and there were 8 of us that were caught and we all were brought down. Mm. And so, you know, we had each other and we still do. We get together and laugh about it a lot. Or at least, you know, online on the Facebook, because we're scattered all over. But I mean, like, thank God that happened.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about all the major things in my life and I'm like, you know, major setbacks that really suck, the time and career stuff. And I'm like, it all prepares you for like realizing that like the world doesn't owe you anything just because you deserve it.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, in this business that we're in, like how many jobs like do we think that should have been mine? Well, yeah, maybe, sure, but it's not.
Yeah.
And it's not gonna, just because you deserve it, it's not gonna
make
it happen.
You're not gonna get it. Yeah.
You know, there's so many things and you have to just kind of go, all right, was meant to be, shaking it off. And I'm very glad I had to learn that lesson.
That's
because
interesting.
I don't know if I'd had casual hints thrown my way, I don't know that it would have hit me. I had to have like an anvil fall on my head and go, okay, you know.
I had a very, I had like the same, I learned the same lesson, but had a really different experience in school growing up. I'm one of 5 kids, and my parents were really amazing.
And you have a very artistic family.
A really artistic family.
Yeah.
And my parents were really good about judging each of us as who we were in school. I mean, like, they weren't like, the grill kids get A's. They were like, Andrew gets these grades, Claire gets these grades, Mary gets these grades.
Uh-huh.
I had some like major problems in school. Now, I was a great student. I got mostly A's, but it wasn't because I have like some reading disabilities and some things that were barriers. And also being one of 5, like it's amazing to me that my parents worked with me the way they did.
Yeah.
I probably starting in about 4th grade, my dad did my homework with me every single night.
Wow.
Through high school. And it was mostly like math and history and mostly those two. Like I could I had a really specific way of approaching information is the simplest way to say it. But like I would do my homework, he would check it, and then we would redo the whole thing. And I would spend with my dad probably 3 hours a night.
Wow.
When they would go out of town, which wasn't super often, he would outline every lesson I would be learning while he was gone.
Oh, wow.
And he would put it like basically in my language.
That's so cool.
And I succeeded in school because they cared. But like I worked so much harder than the people around me for the A's and B's that I got and the occasional C. And I got a D. I got a D here and there.
Hey.
Okay, the door's right here. It's nice to meet you, but that's
disgusting.
Horrifying.
It's the worst thing I've ever heard.
You idiot. But like, I think what my takeaway was like, similarly, I felt like I knew what working as hard as you possibly can looked like.
Right.
And then you get to this profession and all of that effort, like you're saying, like doesn't automatically mean you get the A or whatever, whatever. You know, like hard work doesn't necessarily equal results in what we do.
And often the opposite happens. I've found that there are things that I've spent so much time preparing for, like hours and hours detailing and analyzing. And then I go in and I'm like, well, that went terribly. And then there's something I'm like, I don't have time to look at this. And I book it. And I'm like, why?
How, why? It's not how the world should work.
I know.
And it does. It does. And it's just a thing where you have to believe that there's something greater than us that's at play that knows what's up. And that we have to just go, okay, cool. I'm just a part of this. I'm playing along with this because, you make yourself crazy analyzing why. Like, why did that go terribly? Why did that, you know? And we get in our own way. We're our own worst enemy. We get like, we make things too important. I know that's why, like, I have to do a million shows and have a million things on my plate at one time because I feel like my work is better. I'm cranky. I'm tired sometimes and I can be really sharp. And lately I'm finding myself being like, ugh. Because I'm busy, but I'm loving being busy, and I feel like I can kind of do better work when I get out of my own way.
Right.
And if I go a long time without performing, then I will do like a one-off at some, you know, tiny little space, and I make it so important to myself, and I'm like so nervous and worried, and what's this going to be, and what's that, and like you have to remember, like this is what we do, and like it's going to go how it goes, and it's kind of out of my hands, you know, and it's just like, and I have to remember why I'm doing this. It's to have fun and to connect, and you know, and my idea of what it's going to be or how it's going to go. It's just like, you know, how we have like conversations, like, you know, we have plans to meet somebody for lunch, and we start. I do this, and like in my head, in the shower before I meet them, I start having the conversation, like what are we going to talk about, and it's all goes out the window. Like it's like, I don't know why I do that, but it's like this weird thing to like make myself feel like everything's going to be okay, but I'm like, it is going to be okay, and it's probably not going to go the way you think it's going to go, and who knows what you're going to talk about. And you know, sometimes I'm like, I want to make sure to ask them about such and such, or I can't wait to tell them the story. And maybe it comes up, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
Try the chicken.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's
human
like just
to
like
want things to go well.
Yeah.
You know, or to connect.
Yeah.
You know,
but also things never go exactly ever the way that you think they're, and sometimes for the better. But
yeah,
I know. Mary, I want to hear a story. A revelation, a thing, anything.
This is something, well, I like telling this story because I don't share it very often. And then people are like, no kidding, that happened to you? So I'm from Chicago. And when I was still living there, I won money in a raffle. Do you know about this?
No, I don't know about this. Yeah. How old were you?
I was 25.
Okay.
So I used to answer phones at a hair salon in Chicago and in the basement,
what?
No windows, mold on the walls, low ceilings.
Wait. Who would go get their hair done?
The riches were upstairs.
Oh, okay.
And I was answering the phones in the basement.
Oh, I see.
Oh, my God. So, were you alone?
There was like a bunch of girls. Okay. It was like, they were like,
at least
the
you were by yourself.
Were you kidnapped and forced to do this?
We were.
Or were you? No.
We were. You know, those girls were a lot of fun, and we were friends, and it was like, you know, everybody was in their early 20s and trying to figure it out, and I was like, and they, it was like one of my first interviews out of college, and, you know, I did the math on what I needed to make in order to pay rent and these things, and all I wanted to do was, like, get going and audition and stuff, and so I sat down for an interview and said, you know, can I go out and audition, like, here and there when that comes up at work? And they were like, sure. And I was like, great, I'm sold. It didn't. Nothing else mattered.
That, I totally remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I remember that. When I moved to L.A., I was like, I'm getting a job, and I'm going to auditions whenever they happen, and if they won't let me out, I'll just quit the job.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't think beyond that. I was like, that's fine. I'll just quit.
Either.
Get another job.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't care
how hard it was to get
silly.
A job.
Or like a dumb job, you know, it was, it didn't matter. It was just money.
Right.
And that's fine. So anyway, I was broke because it was that job. I was answering phones at a salon.
Yeah.
And also I was young, but I was walking down the street outside the salon one day on Armitage, and I came upon this woman who had like pamphlets, and she said, would you like to win one of those cars? And she sort of like motioned to the parking lot across the street, and it had five red sports cars, like a Range Rover, a Mercedes-Benz, a BMW, and a his and her Mini Cooper, which was like a Mini Cooper and then like a convertible.
And a Mini Cooper that was pink that had eyelashes over the eyes.
So, which one is hers? So I said, yeah, I would like to win one of those cars. And she said, well, you can buy a ticket and enter the raffle for the Children's Memorial Hospital. They're $100. We're having like a black tie dinner, and the winner will be chosen. And I was like, oh, I don't have $100. Thank you so much. Uh-huh. And the pamphlets were like official, and I had some guilt about taking one when I knew I wasn't going to. I didn't have the money to buy a raffle ticket. And so I
love that you had guilt over taking a pamphlet.
I definitely did. I was like, that's got gloss. No. Like, these aren't just like pieces of paper flyers. So
it's a full folded pamphlet.
It is a folded pamphlet. So I said, no, thanks. I don't have the $100. You know, good luck. And she said, well, there are 5 grand prize winners, and there's only 5,000 tickets sold. And my reaction was great odds. Great.
Yeah, 1 in 1,000.
1 in 1,000. And I was like, those are great odds. And I was like,
I'm just impressed that they could sell 5,000
$100 tickets.
$100 tickets.
On the street.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if they'd sell them all. Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Maybe. Who knows?
But there's a limit. It's not like a million.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. So anyway, I was like, I will take a pamphlet. I'm going to take one. And she gave it to me, and I had it in my hand, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to win. And I went back home to my parents that night. I was just going to visit, and we were barbecuing. And I was sitting on the deck. It was just my dad and I. And I was telling him about this, and I said, you know, I ran into this lady. There's a fundraiser for Children's Memorial Hospital. The tickets are $100. You can choose a sports car, or you can choose a cash prize of $40,000. It's your choice. And I think I'm going to win. And my dad said, what are you talking about? And I was like, I really think I'm going to win. I said, Dad, I don't have $100, but I have $50. Would you split it with me? And he was like, why do you think you're going to win? And I was like, I don't know. But honestly, I hate to break it to you, I'm going to win.
Oh, my God.
And so he was like, okay. My dad's a doctor. He was happy to donate to the hospital. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'll split it with you. And so we filled it out and put it in the mail. And the black tie dinner was maybe 2 months away. And I wasn't obviously going to go to that. But I could, you know, they had my phone number. Mm-hmm. And so I told everyone at the salon about this. All the girls in the basement.
All the basement girls.
Yeah, and the ladies who like painted people's nails. And I was like, you guys, I am going to win $40,000. And they were like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, there's this woman. She sold a raffle ticket, and I got the ticket. And I really just, I think I'm going to win. And
oh, my God.
So I got the ticket in the mail. I probably told about 30 people in my life, like, just so you know, I'm about to have a windfall. I was working at Second City. I told my director, like, hey, I am going to be in Italy, I think, while there are this part of the show is running that I wanted to be involved in. So what should I do? Like,
because you already planned your Italian vacation. Oh,
I already spent that money.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Yes. My brother and my very good friend Joe were both in Italy. And I was like, well, I'm going to do something fun. And then the rest all, I wanted to use it to move to New York because I really wanted to, like, get it going with what I was with comedy and life and things. And I really wanted to move to New York, but I didn't have the money to do that. And so this was the plan. I was like, I'm going to win this money. I'm going to move to New York. But first, I'm going to go to Italy. And so my director at Second City was like, you're going to Italy? And I was like, well, yes, I think I'm going to win $40,000. And then I'm...
Oh,
and
my God, your improv teacher was like,
you're
got
insane.
A loony.
Yeah. He was like, okay.
Also, I love you told him, like, in my years of teaching improv, I never had a student that was like, I think I'm going to win all this money.
What the hell was I talking about?
But you knew.
You just knew. You just knew.
Yeah. I totally knew. The day that they chose the numbers at the children's, the black tie dinner happened, and I didn't realize it had happened. It happened over the weekend, and I punched in for work. I think it was a Tuesday, and I punched in and I said to the girls, like, did I say I'm gonna get the call? And the girls were like, stop it. You know? And at 11 o'clock, the phone rang, just one phone, because there's like a bank of phones. And one of the phones rang, and my friend Kate answered, and she said, can
you gave them the number of the salon, your work number.
I must have I did.
Was this before cell phones?
No, I had a cell phone, but they must have, like, called my work.
Probably wanted them all just in case so they could reach you. Yeah.
Yeah. She works at a salon. How sad. Let's call her.
So, just to check in.
Yeah.
Well, you probably didn't have service. You were in a basement, so they had to call your work.
The landline.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. The landline. It was my landline. So Kate puts it on hold, and she looks at me like a ghost, and she just said, Mary Children's Memorial Hospital is on the phone. And everybody,
oh my God,
like, froze. It was silent. And everybody, it was probably like six people in the basement, and everybody's like, oh my God. And I pick up the line, and I'm clearly on speakerphone, and there's like a group of people on the other line. They said, is this Mary Grill? And I said, yes. And they said, this is Children's Memorial Hospital. I was like, did I win? And they said, did you buy a raffle ticket? And I said, yes, I'm an actress. I'm an actress.
I'm
trying to move to New York City. Did I win? And they said, you won.
Oh.
And I took the phone and I threw it at the low, it like hit the ceiling immediately. And I like ran out of the room. And I like told all the nail people, and everybody was like, it was like such a celebration.
Oh my God.
And that is crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
And you actually did know.
I like knew.
How did you know?
I don't know. And I called my dad first, and I was so like overwhelmed that I was whispering, and I never call my dad at work. And so he answered, and I was like, Dad, I want the money. We want the rebel. And he was like, pause. And then he said, you are shitting me.
Oh.
It was.
And did you split the money with him?
He wouldn't take it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
He would. I was like, it's ours. We won. And he was, you know.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I'm sure he was relieved.
Of course. Oh, my God.
It was one of those things where it's like, you can't. I wasn't going to win.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, yeah. And also, like, you're about to have, can you imagine this child that you're about to have is win something huge? You're not going to be like, well, I helped you get that, so I'll take half.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm an adult, and I'm so happy for my kid that you got this thing that's just, you know, it's yours.
Yeah, shine it was so me. Nice, though.
I
it was
how
so
wonderful.
Isn't that cool? And
that's
I moved
so great.
To New York,
and
I went
you
to Italy.
The
you
money.
Did.
You did.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did the math because I was like, maybe if you take the car and you sell the car, it's...
No.
But you have to pay taxes on the car to receive the car,
yes.
Which I didn't have that.
But you had to pay taxes on the cash too, right? But later?
Yeah, they like give it all, they give you the money with the taxes already taken out.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's really good.
Oh, yeah. That sounds unusual. That's great.
It was so
yeah.
fun. When I deposited it at the bank, I was like, I owe them an explanation. This is insane.
This is crazy.
And it's probably
money.
Not that insane.
Right.
But I was
but still,
like,
still, oh, well, yeah, course, that's a lot of, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's really good. I mean, it's so complicated. I mean, you know, when you win something, it's always lovely and wonderful. But I have been in the category of winning a thing and not money. And there, I won. I was going to talk about it. It was just because it was crazy. First of all, Outfest Film Festival gave me an award a couple years ago. Which was so lovely, and they're like, and I try to give them as many shout outs as I can because they have been so good to me. And they just wrapped up this last, their LA, you know, their festival is always in July.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me an award a few years ago, and it was so, I was so not expecting it. And it was just
That's
one of
cool.
those things that I had no idea that, like, they, you know, and some people, depending on like each, like the awards were sponsored by different. You know, organizations. And so depending on who sponsored it, that determined the prize that they gave. To me, I would have been happy. Actually, I said many times, I would have been just happier just getting the recognition. You got the award. Like we recognize what you do and we want to honor that because that was so huge. And that moment I'll never forget because they were talking about, like, I was in a bunch of short films weirdly that year and they were talking about this actor and he played all these roles and I'm sitting there going, who are they talking about? Like, I had no idea until they said my name because they just treated everything so earnestly and it was a lot of these like crazy you know shitstorm 3-minute you know videos that I did
yeah,
that I was
yeah.
like, it's so nice that they, you know, so I was so touched and it was lovely. But the award that I got was from a little company called Kodak, and they're no longer in business. And I don't care because let me tell you, my award that Kodak gave was, it was a certain amount of film stock. I got film. I got literal film from Kodak. I met with this woman, she was like the liaison, and the award that I got normally goes to a filmmaker. It was the award for emerging talent. So they usually give it to like a filmmaker whose film that they see potential in. You know, they every year they sort of decide, the film festival goes, oh, we're going to give it to, you know, somebody that we believe in or whatever. And this year they randomly gave it to an actor. And so I got all this film. Well, everything I do is digital and I don't work in film. I don't know how to put film in a camera. I don't know. I mean, I guess, I mean, even like movies that I've been in are usually digital. I mean,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
I think film
Boardwalk Empire was like partially such a thing to discuss because they shot it on film.
Right, exactly. It's rare that anything is shot on film anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, film is beautiful. And I was, so I was willing to sort of work with them, but I sat down with this woman at Kodak and I was just like, so, can any of this, it was some amount of money in film stock. I don't remember what the amount was. At this time, I couldn't pay my bills. That was the year I was going to Outfest and I was getting pretzels and free vodka. And I was like, how am I going to pay this bill versus that bill? I was in a really rough patch financially then. And it was this like thing where I'm like, I'm getting recognized and I can't eat. And I had this giant, I had a piece of paper with a big amount of money on it that I was like, can any of this money go toward equipment that, you know, that I can rent. You know, no, it was just the film stock. Can any of it go towards the editing? No. So it was just this, it was useless to
me.
And I couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
And I didn't know anybody that could shoot on film and use it, because I was like, maybe I'll take a short that I've written and shoot it on film, make something beautiful with it, because I wanted to use this prize that I had been given. Mm-hmm.
But then you have to hire someone who can edit the film.
Exactly.
And, like, it's a whole
other thing. And I was like, I can do nothing with this.
Oh,
the
man.
Woman at Kodak was so evil, and we come to find out she's also a filmmaker, and she didn't understand why her shorts didn't get into Outfest.
Oh,
and it was like, oh, horrible woman.
I want her on Town Hall.
At Kodak. Oh, complete character for Town Hall. And... you know, and Outfest was so lovely about it and so apologetic. And I was talking to so many people, and I'm like, I want to do something with this because this means so much to me. And finally, after a year of going back and forth and doing everything I could, and I was trying, and I was like sitting on this thing, and I was like, you know, and the certificate expired after a year, and I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And so I sort of reached the end point where I basically had to just pick up a trunk load full of film in my car and take it over across town and sell it to a production company that was just buying film. So they basically bought film for me for a little bit, like about half of what it was worth. Mm. So they were getting a deal, and I got a check for like half that amount. And it was like pawning a wedding ring or something. I mean, not that big.
Yeah.
But it had meaning.
It had meaning. And I felt so gross that I'm just taking this thing and I'm driving it across town to go sell it.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, but at least I'll do something with this.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, I did need money really badly. And, you know, but it was so complicated that I couldn't just, and they were so unhelpful, the Kodak people, about it. Like, there was nothing that could be done, and they were mad, and they were like, well, I don't know what to tell you. We normally give this to a filmmaker. And it was like, well, even filmmakers couldn't do much with this.
Isn't
and
a thing. Yeah.
So it was really rough. And I mean, it was a matter of just like maybe 2 years after that they were like, Kodak was like shutting down. I mean, Kodak's done.
You
as far
put
as
them
I know.
Out of business.
Wow.
I was thrilled.
You took all of their films.
I was so mad. And for all the good that they've done for the world, I was like, you know what? You guys didn't stay with the times. You did stay with the times. You didn't change with the times.
Right.
Your action to me was just a small example of how you treated the world and how you interacted. And the world is changing. And it's like, you can either die with the old way of doing things, or you can change.
Yeah.
And you're not willing to change, so die. And I was just like, well, good that my justice in that, you know, on such a stupid personal level, but yeah, you always take the money. It's
always
it's so much easier, even when the money's less than, you know, even if it's a $100,000 car, 40 grand, oh my God, so much better.
Oh, yeah.
So much better.
And they did the math. It was probably all the same value.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they faxed a form to the salon, to the basement in the salon that I had to fill out. It said, please check one. Range Rover.
Oh, my
God. Mercedes Benz.
So fun.
His and her Mini Cooper. One prize.
One prize.
Or 40 grand. And I just went like. It was so great.
Oh my God, fax it back. And here comes a check. I love that.
Isn't that great? That's amazing.
I love that you're like, there was some force that you just knew. You just knew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I'm going to get this. This is mine.
It was so strange. And I don't like get those feelings in my life.
Yeah.
I'm not like, it was like, I was positive.
And that was what made you able to move to New York.
Yeah.
And go to Italy.
And get out of the basement.
Get out of the basement.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, it really, you know, it's like I was able to move to New York, and like I had a little bit of money to like be there and figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's like after tax, even 40 grand, even if I got $40,000, it's like that's a lot of money. It's not going to change your whole life.
That's a lot of money.
It's like some choices.
But it absolutely will give you the cushion that you need.
Totally.
To, you know, it is a lot of money.
That's
really, when you think about it, like,
money and,
yeah.
And some stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And time that you're not having to work so that you can start planting seeds, you know, creatively, and just breathe a little bit and not feel like you have to be, you know. That's awesome.
It changed everything.
Yeah.
It changed my life, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I can't think of I don't know if I would have had the nerve to, I think my mom and dad, if I was like, look, I really need your help. Can you help me get to New York?
Of course they would.
I think they would, but I just like didn't, I wasn't thinking about asking them at all.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it was my responsibility as far as I was concerned, but it was like, how do you, do I put it on a credit card?
Yeah, right.
What do you do?
What do you do? And you,
you win money is what you
and
do.
And you just knew. They were like, there was something that I was like, I should be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are out of time. I'm so sorry.
Time.
I mean, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having
me. Oh my God, you guys, it was so wonderful. I loved this whole thing. Lie. Learn how to lie.
Yeah.
Shred your report card, make it art, then throw it away.
Yeah.
Trust your instincts. Trust weird, witchy women on the street who want to give you very nice pamphlets.
That's
if
right.
If the pamphlet has a gloss.
If it has a gloss.
Take it.
Take
yes.
it.
Yes.
You know, it's worth it.
But feel guilty about it first.
Yes.
And then take
you guys,
it.
I literally was like, I could possibly take that. I couldn't possibly take that nice pamphlet.
I love it. I love it so much. I want to thank my guests, Lana McKissick and Mary Grill. Thank you, Miss Evetcha Evetcha, be here. I'm very drunk.
Yeah.
This has been another episode of True Drunkies Minor Revelations. Thank you for listening and have a week.
Have a week.